Welcome to the School of Wellbeing. I'm your host, Meg Durham, wellbeing speaker and teacher wellbeing specialist. Before we begin, I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land and waters on which this podcast is being recorded. Hello and welcome to episode 119. At the end of a busy school day, what helps you to wind down? When I ask this question in a room full of big-hearted staff, someone will inevitably call out beer, wine, Dan Murphy's, G&T, or once in Outback Queensland, from the back of the room, this booming voice called out rum. So it's got me curious, alcohol, education, where does it all fit? And I went looking for some research. And a study conducted by Bond University found that alcoholism among teachers is 3 times higher than the population's average, and found that 17% of teachers who participated in the study have probable alcohol dependence. The increasing workloads, demanding parents, and workplace politics were some of the reported reasons teachers are turning to the booze. To help us untangle our relationship between alcohol and stress, I have the joy of chatting with grey area drinking coach Sarah Rushbatch. Sarah is the author of the new book, Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol-Free. And Sarah is on a mission to support as many women as possible to change their relationship with alcohol, reconnect with themselves, and create a healthier, happier, and more fulfilling life. In this conversation, we discuss what is grey area drinking, how alcohol exacerbates our stress levels, the benefits of life beyond booze, and so much more. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Sarah Rushbatch. Sarah, welcome to the School of Wellbeing podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Today we're going to be talking about your new book, Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol-Free. What motivated you to write this book?
So I made the decision to remove alcohol from my life 5 years ago now, and I didn't describe myself as an alcoholic. I wasn't drinking every day. I wasn't drinking in the morning, but I was definitely drinking in that grey area, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a sec. And after I removed alcohol, everything in my life changed. I then went on to retrain to become a grey area drinking coach. And I shared my story in Mamma Mia. And after that article went live, it actually went viral, and 8,000 women contacted me within 24 hours of reading it. And they said to me, "You've just told my story." And my story wasn't unique. My story wasn't different. I wasn't an end stage drinker. I hadn't lost my job or my relationship. I wasn't waking up in the morning needing to have a drink. I was relying on alcohol for my stress, for any uncomfortable emotions, to give me energy if I was going out. And when I shared my story, so many people resonated with it. And I'm a coach. I work with people all over the world, but I wanted to write this book so that I could reach more and more women to share both my story, but also to share really practical tools and tips to enable them to change their relationship with alcohol if they've noticed that it's got to the point where it's impacting them mentally, emotionally, physically, any of those three.
How profound to think that 8,000 other humans reached out to you to say that you have just told my story.
And that was the people that were brave enough to reach out. The editor at Mamma Mia said it was one of their most read articles that year. And so there's definitely a lot of women who are in silence using alcohol to numb emotions, to manage stress, to alleviate boredom, overwhelm, loneliness, or any of those uncomfortable emotions. But they know that they're not alcoholics. They know that they're not at that point with end stage drinking, and they don't know what they are. And when I came and shared my story and I described grey area drinking, it was so helpful for them to go, "That makes so much sense. I know I'm not an alcoholic, but I know I'm not just an everyday social, every now and then drinker either. I am a grey area drinker." And for many people, it's really helpful to understand that.
So what exactly is grey area drinking?
So it's a term coined by Jolene Park in the States back in 2012. And it really describes that place between someone who's an every now and then drinker. So probably you, Meg, based on the conversations we've had, alcohol's not really hugely present in their life. They might have a glass of champagne at a wedding. They might decide on a random party, "Oh, maybe I'll drink, maybe I won't, I don't really care." So that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is what we've described as some stereotypical the alcoholic or someone with severe alcohol use disorder. So someone who is physically dependent on alcohol. So someone who wakes up with shakes in the morning, drinks every day and needs to have medical support to stop drinking because alcohol is one of only three substances that the human body can die from withdrawal from. So that's two ends of the spectrum. Not many people are actually that spectrum. The gray area describes people in the middle where they're still high functioning. They're still holding down their jobs. They're raising families. They're doing all the things. I was running half marathons. I was running a successful business. I was doing all of that. But I was also drinking well above the 14 units a week. And I was definitely drinking in a way that wasn't just every now and then. It was to make my stress go away. It was for a reason. Alcohol had become a crutch. And it's now estimated that 3 billion people across the globe sit in this category of grey area drinking or mild to moderate alcohol use disorder. And just to clarify, alcohol use disorder is described as above 14 units of alcohol per week, which is about 8 glasses of wine.
It is so powerful to have this language because, as you say, we don't really know what to call it or in the middle. And so now to have this language, grey area drinking. So I'm curious to know, when did you know that you had a problem with alcohol?
Really good question. I had always been a big drinker. I was brought up in the north of England. I started drinking at 14. That was kind of what you did back then. I used alcohol to socialize. We're talking about the 90s, right? So this was the era of girl power, the Spice Girls, Sex and the City. Samantha Jones was drinking her cocktails and having one-back stands around New York. And every woman across the world was going, cheers, yes, girl power, and all of this. And so for me, alcohol had always been present. I was a big party girl. I was a big drinker. But it was never problematic. Like back then, I worked in London in the 90s. My fourth interview at the firm I worked for was to go to the pub and do shots of tequila to see how well I could handle my booze, right? So this was the 90s. But alcohol was very present in my life, but it was never problematic. Like I would get up and go to work the next day. I could live on 3 hours sleep. A hangover was nothing that a can of Diet Coke and a packet of crisps didn't sort out. Like it just wasn't problematic. Looking back, I can see that my alcohol use changed when we moved to Australia. So this was in 2010. And I had 2 kids under 2. And we've made the decision for the kids to bring them up outside, move away from the grey skies of London and move to the beach and live in the sunshine. My husband's from New Zealand and he wanted to give our kids, you know, more of that outdoor lifestyle, as did I. So we came out here and I completely underestimated the toll it would take on my mental health, my sense of self-worth, because I'd been a director of a very successful firm in London. And all of a sudden, I was at home in Perth. I was starting to make new friends, but they certainly weren't people that I could fully open up to. I had none of my girls around me. I didn't have any family around me. I had 2 very demanding young children under 2. My husband was out at work all day. I was pureeing carrot, going to monkey music, changing nappies. And my whole identity, this whole shift of who I was, going from Sarah, the party girl that was often, you know, in restaurants around London and New York at weekends, and that was my life, to this. And I was so homesick, Mick. I was so lonely. I was so confused because on paper, I had everything that I'd always wanted. I was living in Australia by the beach. I have beautiful, beautiful, healthy children. I had a husband that supported me and we were financially stable enough that I could take this period of time off work to be with the kids, and he was setting up a business. Inside, I just felt sad. I was really sad. I was really homesick. I was really lonely. And that was when alcohol use became something that I did more at home on my own. I hear this time and time again, regardless of whether you've made a move to the other side of the world or not, you can't socialize as much anymore. Your sense of identity, if you've been particularly working and then you're having that time off work, completely changes. The demands of young children, never getting that time to yourself, like the worry, the anxiety, and then throw into that, you've got mummy wine culture where we're constantly being sold. Mums to serve wine. So you've got this continuum of these 2 things happening at once where the marketing of alcohol to mums is steady, constant, it's relentless. You're feeling stressed, overwhelmed, anxious. Maybe you're feeling lonely because you're not seeing your friends as much because you're at home with kids. And then alcohol becomes the solution. And I didn't even realize it had become the solution. It just was something I did. And then 2017, a couple of things happened where alcohol had been very present. I'd had a fall, I fell over, I cut my face. And just a couple of moments, my drinking's going too far. And that was when I took my first break from alcohol back in 2017.
Oh, it's so interesting to hear that over time, the building pressures of life that you noticed that you depended on alcohol more and more and more.
And this is the thing with alcohol is it's really in insidious the buildup of how we use it, because alcohol's addictive. Professor David Nutt puts it up there with the top five most addictive substances in the world, and we build tolerance to it. So you've got this double whammy of what starts as one glass quickly becomes two because one doesn't work anymore, and then two doesn't work, so it's three. And because you build tolerance, the body starts learning how to get the alcohol out of your system as quickly as possible. Because we've got to remember that alcohol is poison to the human body and wants to get it out of you as much as it can. So it starts to learn to adjust to the amount that you're drinking so you don't get the same buzz. I've got clients who could easily be drinking a bottle of wine or more most night and still feel pretty highly functioning because of the way that their body has adapted to that.
Yes, and that ability to adapt that over time, you probably don't even really notice that this is just a new way of being.
Yeah, and it's very normalized in society. It's very, very normalized. You know, any WhatsApp group that you're in as a mum and you go in there and go, oh my goodness, the kids are driving me nuts today. And the first response will be, I'll go home and have a glass of wine. Like, we're almost doing big alcohol's job for it because we just continually share the message that alcohol is self-care, alcohol is a reward, alcohol is something you deserve at the end of a stressful day, and that's the only way to switch off.
So as a grey area drinking coach, do you often work with teachers?
Yeah, I would say number one profession I work with is teachers, and the second is nurses, which I guess makes sense to me.
Gosh, it is quite sobering to hear that teachers are the number one profession that seek you out.
Yeah, and I think this isn't to shame anyone. Like, the one thing I say to everybody is there is no shame in using alcohol because it is so publicly and culturally marketed and expected, and it's highly addictive. And so if we are using alcohol and we know that it's not serving us anymore, but we still feel like we can't stop or we can't change, there is no shame in that because we do live in a society that really does promote it in that way. I mean, I feel for my teachers because I look at the day to day of their daily life, the pressure, they're not really having any time, you know, the nerve being on all the time where you're with the children, you come home, and then there's often so much more to still be doing after you finish your teaching. And there's a level of exhaustion because it does physically and emotionally take a lot out of you to be teaching all day, every day. And you're just looking for that quick fix. And the thing about alcohol is it's a brilliant short-term quick fix. The problem is it's an absolute nightmare for your body long-term.
Yes. And when I speak to staff all across the country and we talk about alcohol, even just mention it, you see the laughter in the room and you see it really builds that sense of connection. Like, oh gosh, you know, we're at week eight, so we're up to like more wine now. And we've kind of normalized that alcohol is a way that we cope in our demanding profession.
Absolutely. I see this all the time. And if we're ever to make a change there, you know, I'm not here to demonize alcohol and I'm not here to say you must never drink, alcohol is the devil. But I am here to provide factual scientific information about the impact of alcohol on a woman's body. And so, I mean, I mostly work with women rather than men, and to be able to understand why alcohol actually isn't a great solution for stress. I'm really, really passionate about, Meg, is not telling people you can't drink, but it is actually helping those people who are using alcohol as a way to switch off because of stress, to help them to understand that it's actually making your stress so much worse. And the number one thing that my clients find when they make a decision to take a break from booze is how much their anxiety reduces, how much calmer they become, and how much less stressed they feel. So we end up in this kind of vicious cycle where we're using alcohol for stress, the alcohol's making us more stressed, so then we keep drinking. And sometimes it just takes stepping away from that to actually be able to give yourself that break to see, how do I feel without it?
It's so interesting to untangle that relationship between alcohol and stress, because for so many educators, it's the alcohol is going to reduce the stress. At the end of a really, really busy day, high pressure, I deserve that glass of wine or that beer or the G&T because it's going to help me to settle after such a big day.
Let me just tell you a little bit physiologically that what happens when we drink alcohol, and I'm talking about people that drink one or two glasses of wine three or four times a week. I'm not talking about people that are drinking two bottles of wine a night. I'm talking about that lower amount of just bordering on alcohol use disorder. So when we drink alcohol, it's a depressant and it gives our brain a huge surge of a neurotransmitter called GABA. GABA is the inhibitory neurotransmitter, which is why we feel calm and relaxed in that moment. Because the brain wants balance between all of your neurotransmitters, neurotransmitters. The brain sees that there's been a huge surge of this inhibitory neurotransmitter, and that sends all of the neurotransmitters in the brain out of balance. So the brain's job is to get balance as quickly as possible. So it actually releases the stress hormone cortisol to bring the neurotransmitters back into balance. The GABA response wears off, and we end up feeling more stressed and anxious than we were before we even had a drink. So this is often, people who drink quite a lot will often find that they will wake at 2 or 3 in the morning with perhaps a racing heart or feeling quite anxious. And that is because the alcohol effect has worn off, but we're left with this circulating cortisol, the stress hormone, going around the body. They've actually done blood tests on people who don't drink and people who drink about 14 units a week. And those that drink 14 units a week have a higher level of the stress hormone cortisol circulating through their body than people who don't drink at all.
It's so fascinating because in the moment, it feels like it's doing its job. And in the moment, it's really working. We feel good, we feel the benefits. And then that links in to that part of the brain that doesn't want to think about the consequences, doesn't want to think about the future. It's thinking about survival. How do I just get through this busy day? I don't really want to think about 2 a.m. or the next day. So how do you work with teachers to join those dots between that glass or a few glasses or 8 glasses a week is impacting these other areas of your life?
Yeah, so all the work that I do with clients is around education. So it's around them starting to understand physiologically. I think many of us have, I certainly had a head in the sand approach to my drinking. I knew it wasn't great for me. I knew there were some health risks, but I certainly didn't want to hear them. And so if a single article came out that went, red wine is good for the heart, I'd be like, yeah, phew, it's all okay. I knew that it wasn't so bad. And just, you know, many of those articles are funded by the alcohol industry. And you'd actually have to drink 3 or 4 bottles of red wine to get as much resveratrol that you would need for it to be good for the heart. And the impact of that 3 or 4 bottles would outweigh any of the health benefits. You know, I had a head in the sand approach. I didn't want to hear that alcohol has a very strong link to breast cancer. I didn't want to hear that alcohol has a very strong link to dementia. I didn't want to hear that a woman's body cannot metabolize alcohol in the same way as a man's, which means that women become addicted to alcohol quicker, and which means that women are more vulnerable to the health risk of alcohol than men are. And I share this because there is a problem. We have got a massive problem culturally for midlife women, which is that alcohol use disorder in women has increased 84% in the last 30 years. So alcohol use disorder being more than that, 8 glasses of wine a week, 14 units. And it's no coincidence that this increase over the last 30 years has coincided with when the alcohol industry made the deliberate decision to start targeting women with the rise of all of the breezers and the drinks that don't taste so alcoholic. That was a decision the alcohol industry identified they weren't making enough money from women and decided to deliberately start targeting women with a different type of marketing and drinks that were going to be more palatable to women. And so what I try to do is offer women, because I do work mostly with midlife women between 40 and 65, and help them to understand actually for perimenopause, alcohol will exacerbate your night sweats. It will exacerbate your anxiety. It will exacerbate weight gain that many of us start to experience in those menopause years. And so really start to not just talk about why alcohol can be problematic, but actually help offer really practical solutions, tips and strategies to be able to change how we're using alcohol.
And what you're sharing here today, Sarah, is really giving us a full look at the big picture of alcohol, because we've only chosen to look at one part of it. I deserve it, feels good, it's going to reduce my stress. And the old saying, I wind down with alcohol and I wind up with coffee, and that's how we live our lives. But what you're giving us is the bigger picture. And you're also showing really clearly that we are marinating in a culture that celebrates and pedestals alcohol.
Yeah, it's just been Mother's Day in the UK, and I was sharing on my social media just some of the alcohol-related memes, Mother's Day cards, everything like that that are circulating. And I challenge any of your listeners, when it comes up to Mother's Day in Australia, to start to notice that last year I shared there was a mannequin in the window of a very well-known nightwear company in Australia. The mannequin was standing there wearing pajamas that had red wine glasses all over them. And she was in these pajamas with her hair in a turban. In one hand, she had a glass, and in the other hand, she had a half of red wine, like a cask, not even a bottle. And you just think about all those little girls that are going to buy their mum pajamas, and all the messaging they're getting is mum needs wine to relax. Mum deserves wine. And so we're just perpetuating that message to the next generation as well.
So now we know that booze can be a little bit problematic, that over 8 glasses a week, that's when we're really heading beyond grey area drinking. Is that correct?
Yeah. And binge drinking is classified as more than 4 drinks in one occasion. And the rate of binge drinking in Australian women, 1 in 5 now are falling into that category. And we know that binge drinking amongst midlife women is the only demographic where binge drinking is going up and not down. Every other age group and gender group, alcohol use is going down. And in midlife women, it's going up.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because we are seeing in our younger population that they're not engaging in alcohol in the ways that you were talking about earlier. And that really resonates with my experience growing up, that alcohol was how you connected, having big weekends, benders, that was a part of it. And it's interesting that in midlife, it's still happening, but it looks very, very different. And so for teachers listening that think, oh gosh, you know, there are the times where I have more than 4, I do that binge. And yeah, if I'm honest with myself, I have quite a few glasses of wine or whatever the beverage is each week. What can they do?
The first thing is, let's establish how much we're drinking. Like, let's get really realistic, because I would go, I only have 1 glass a night. Now, you should have seen the size of my glass, right? So we're very good at justifying our drinking. It's also just really useful to reflect on, have we noticed that alcohol is having more negative impact on us, particularly as we're aging? And this is what I noticed in my 20s and 30s. Didn't really get hangovers, never had anxiety, was definitely able to function. As soon as I got into my 40s, the impact of alcohol on my body changed. And this is because women contain less of an enzyme called alcohol dehydrogenase, ALDH, which means that we cannot metabolize alcohol as efficiently as men. But as we age, the levels of that enzyme drop even further. And for women, we have a shrinking liver. Who knew? So then our liver volume starts to shrink from our late 30s onwards. So once we get into our 40s and beyond, our body simply can't metabolize alcohol in the same way, which is why it leads to us feeling more anxious, which is why it impacts our sleep, which is why it impacts our performance. Even just 1 glass of wine will completely mess with your sleep. I used to always say, I'm not hungover, I'm just tired. And that was because you don't get restorative sleep when you've had alcohol. You just can't. Like, there's so much science around this, and I go this into detail in my book about it. And so it's a case of noticing, am I waking up most days feeling 4 or 5 out of 10? Is that kind of how I'm feeling? And have I got to the point where feeling 4 or 5 out of 10 is kind of just what I expect? Is that what I'm accepting in my life? Is that what I feel is good enough? Because I felt like that most of the time. And I just kind of went, well, that's all a midlife mum with a busy job, 2 young kids and all the rest of it. That's as good as it gets. But when we give ourselves the chance to take a break from alcohol, 30, 60 days off, and see for ourselves, right, what changes? Get that information. Be curious. See it as an experiment. Get that information. Well, do I sleep better? Do I wake up with more energy? Have I got more mental clarity? Do I feel more switched on and focused and clearer at work? Do I notice my anxiety is massively reduced? Does my capacity for dealing with the stress in my life actually feel like I can cope with it better? Because those are all the things that my clients start to notice when they take that break from alcohol.
Yes. And as you're talking there, Sarah, I'm thinking about my own personal experience. And it's become really clear to me that on the occasions where I do have a glass of champagne in the evening, guarantee I will wake up at 2 o'clock, dehydrated, a little bit restless. And then I wake up a little bit tired and I really feel like exercising, but I really feel like some Vegemite toast and some really sort of hungover food. I'm like, I've literally had a glass of champagne. Like, what has happened to me? Back in the day, that wouldn't even get me started. And just starting to join those dots. And now the question for me when it comes to drinking is it going to be worth it? And sometimes it is. Sometimes I'm happy to do it, but sometimes, like, I actually can't afford to have a disrupted sleep tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is so common. And this is what happens because of a woman's physiology, when we start going into those perimenopause years, our bodies can't metabolize it as much. It destroys our sleep. So when I was drinking at my highest, I was noticing that alcohol was impacting my sleep. So my way of getting around that, Meg, was not to go, oh, I need to stop drinking. And I talk about this so much in the book. I share a lot of my story in that. It wasn't to say I've got to stop drinking. My solution was to take a sleeping tablet when I drank so that I would bypass the 2 a.m. wake up. So I basically knocked myself out with alcohol and a sleeping tablet, which would then mean you can imagine how I would feel at 6 in the morning when I was getting up and getting the kids ready for school and then having to do a full day's work. Like, I was a shadow of the woman you see before you today. But I didn't know it. I didn't know it because I'd never taken a long enough break from alcohol other than pregnancy. And I was a hormonal mess when I was pregnant, so that kind of doesn't count. So other than like pregnancy and those early breastfeeding, I didn't know that how I felt was 4 out of 10. I thought it was normal, and it was only with taking that first break from alcohol, which I did in 2017, that I was like, this is what it's like to wake up every day having had 8 full hours of restorative sleep. This is what it's like to wake up every morning feeling really proud of myself because I didn't drink last night, rather than the first thought in my head being, oh, well, you're a loser. You said you weren't going to drink last night. And there you go. You've had another bottle. You've left your car at your friend's house and you're going to have to go and get the car and get back. And you know, if your negative self-talk starts like that, the moment you wake up, you are not going to be in a good headspace for the day ahead. And it was just, for me, it was such a revelation. Now, I did 100 days off in 2017, and then I got to the end of it because the thing that I was struggling with the most was the peer pressure, because most people around me were going, oh, are you still not drinking? Oh, when are you going to drink? When can we go out again? I had one mum at the school gate say to me, oh, let's catch up when you're drinking again. And it was astonishing that I hadn't really expected that. And so I did go back to drinking, and I thought, oh, I've taken 100 days off. Now I'll be a normal drinker. Now I'll be someone that just has a glass every now and then. But it doesn't work like that for grey area drinkers. We could take a month off, 3 months off, a year off. We pretty much always will go back to where we were before. Within a few weeks, I was back to drinking the same amount as before, which was what led to me in 2019 going, do you know what? Everything in my life is better when I don't drink. I am more productive at work. I am a better mum. I have more energy. I like myself more. I feel more positive. I've lost weight. My skin is glowing. I feel really energized every morning when I wake up. And it was like, why would I go back to the thing that take all of that away from me when all I have to do is not drink? And then I worked really hard on actually building a life where I just didn't even want or need to drink. And that is what is in my book. All the tools, all the strategies that I've implemented in my own life to create a life I love. Because lots of people will say to me, but what do I do for fun? Or what do I do to socialize with my friends? Or what do I do if my partner still drinks? Like, my husband and I were massive drinkers together. And so it impacted our relationship as well when I made that decision to remove alcohol. So all of that is unpacked in detail in the book.
And it's so interesting because we're talking about gray area drinking. But what my mind's thinking as you're talking is we're literally going from shades of grey to vibrant colour, and that alcohol dampens the human experience. And then 4 out of 10, 5 out of 10, that just becomes a normal to what's possible when we move beyond booze and get this vibrant intensity of life. And I would love to know from the teachers that you've worked with, how has their life changed since moving beyond booze?
I've worked with so many teachers, Meg, and the most overriding kind of the number one message I get from them is I've fallen in love with my job again, because my capacity for my workload has increased massively because I'm not foggy, tired, run down, anxious and stressed all the time. Yes, there's still stress, but we have to work really hard. And this is what I do with my clients, is how are we managing stress without booze? Because the stress isn't going away. We live in a world where the stress is always going to be there. The goal is not to not have stress. The goal is to stress well. And I give them the tools to manage stress without needing to turn to alcohol. They notice that they love their job. Many of them had got to the point where they were thinking of leaving their job because they just felt stressed, anxious and overwhelmed all the time. And actually, with the removal of alcohol, it gave them more capacity. It gave them more energy. It gave them more mental clarity. One of my clients is coming up to 2 years sober, and she's had 3 promotions in her school since removing alcohol, because just the way she shows up and the way she feels, the motivation that she has now is just completely different. Because you can't remove alcohol and to not then find that other things in your life start to change, because you end up with more time, you end up with more energy, and you end up with more money. So then you start using that for things that bring you joy. So if you've got a more joyful life outside of work as well, then you're going to show up very differently at work. Whereas if all you're doing in your life is going to work, finding it really stressful, coming home, drinking a few glasses of wine, going to bed, getting up and doing the same again, where's the joy? Where's the fulfillment? Where's the fun for us as individuals? And so that's what removing alcohol gives. It's not just about removing alcohol. It's what it opens up in your entire life.
Oh, Sarah, I am so excited by this conversation because I know that this conversation is going to change the quality of teachers' lives, because once we know better, then we can do better. And also remembering that we're all human. This is not a personal failing. Things happen in everyone's lives and things just happen slowly, 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 slowly. But getting to a point where, you know what? I can make a difference. I can make a different choice. I can have a little experiment to see what happens and to get your book and to reach out for coaching and know that there is so much hope when it comes to living a life alcohol-free. And I am just so, so grateful that you're willing to put this work out into the world. To wrap up this beautiful conversation, I'd love to invite you to complete 4 sentences. Are you up for that?
Sure.
I am inspired by
every sober woman in the world.
When life feels hard,
I cuddle my dog.
An underrated skill is
saying no.
And I'm looking forward to
my facial that's happening today for my birthday.
Oh, wonderful. Well, happy birthday, Sarah. We are so grateful that you had the courage to do the hard work, to create this book, and to really give this message to so many big-hearted humans out there that are doing the juggle, they're under pressure, they're trying to cope, and to give them that sense of hope that there is life beyond booze. Life doesn't stop if we stop drinking. Thank you so much for your work, and thank you for being guest on the School of Wellbeing podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. And for any teacher listening, I see I hear stories from teachers day in, day out. Please don't hesitate to reach out if you just want to say hi, if you want to ask about how I work with people and support people, if you'd like to bring me in as a speaker in your school, anything like that, please reach out, because I am so passionate about what I do. Thanks so much for having me, Meg.
How incredible is Sarah? I hope this conversation has helped you get a better understanding of the subtle and obvious ways that alcohol can impact the quality of our lives. Sarah's new book, Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol-Free, is now available online and in store. To learn more about Sarah and her popular 30-day alcohol-free program, see the show notes for more details. In this great big sea of podcasting, the School of Wellbeing is a little fish. So if you find value in these conversations, there are 4 ways you can show your support. Subscribe and follow the show on your podcast app. Share this episode with a colleague or on Instagram, LinkedIn. Leave a 5-star rating or write a short review. To learn more about the ways that I can help you and your school staff thrive, visit my website, openmindeducation.com. There you can book me to speak or download my free 5-step energy guide. You can find all the links from today's episode at openmindeducation.com/episode119. Thank you for listening to this episode of the School of Wellbeing. And until next time, take care and take deliberate action.